FM News Talk 97.1. On demand audio.
Good morning, Mark. I'm glad you're on this issue because it's a really important one, and because I'm a resident of St. Louis County, so it kind of affects me. So, yeah, I'm glad you're following it.
Well, it's a conversation worth having, particularly since, you know, the Better Together folks keep teasing what it is they want to do, but they haven't come right out and said it yet, which gives me some reason for concern. But ultimately, I don't think having people in Springfield and Cape and other places in the outstate deciding the future of St. Louis City and County government is right.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I am unaware of any instance in the statutes of the Constitution where it is allowed to combine juridical entities. And I know I sound like a lawyer here, but that's what they are, without a vote of the... without approval by the voters in the affected entities, right?
Right.
So, you know, if you annex, for example, and that's one of the big areas of precedent here, you generally have to have a vote in the area to be annexed, as well as the annexing area. I mean, that's the principle, because you don't change these things without consulting the voters who are affected. So maybe they're going to include that. I mean, I don't know. But now, on the merits of the question, I think it's a very intriguing one, and people have been talking about this for a long time. But, I mean, the process matters, too. I mean, how you do things matters as much and sometimes more than what you want to do. So we'll see what they do.
Yeah, very true. Biggest story, obviously, right now, the continued government shutdown. Now the move to try to get the president to delay the State of the Union, which I see as... The speaker not wanting the president to get that bully pulpit in the middle of all of this personally.
No question. You're right about that. Yeah.
Do you think ultimately, I Googled this today. You never get true results with the Google News search, but all of the mainstream media outlets are still siding with Pelosi, claiming she's winning the PR battle and there's no way the president wins this government shutdown. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know if that's true at all. I mean, I think the problem the Democrats have here, in my view, has always been that they voted for this in the past, and that it's a common sense. I mean, the average person can understand. I'm not an expert on border control. I can understand why a passive barrier, whether it's a wall or a fence or whatever, can be very useful for containing, deflecting, defeating certain kinds of threats to the border. I mean, it's obvious. That's why governments build walls, right?
Right.
So, and that's why people have voted for it in the past, because everybody's supposed to be for border security. I mean, you can argue about immigration policy, but everybody's supposed to be for enforcing and making the border secure based on whatever policy that we have. So, you know, when the merits of the issue are with you, then I think you have a good chance to win these kind of communications battles over time. Now, the larger problem is that for political reasons, it's very difficult for either side to give in on this. And so, you know, what is the off-ramp for this? What is the face-saving gesture that will enable everybody to back down? And I don't see that now. And so that's why I think this is going to continue.
Yeah, well, that's probably true, and you know, I pointed this out earlier. I'd like to know your thoughts on it. I said you've got an individual in Donald Trump who's taken steps in other cases like North Korea and these trade issues that have really taken a beating in the media when he's done it. But you have to look at the results. In the end, he's gotten things done that previous presidents haven't. I think that his approach to this border wall funding, particularly with the discovery of 2,000 new people in a caravan moving toward the border.
Right.
My question earlier was, what's the magic number? My question to Nancy Pelosi would be, how many thousands of people or tens of thousands of people do we have to have massing on our southern border before you're willing to admit that this is a problem?
Yeah, because the combination of these caravans and the policies that evidently the courts say we have to follow when people get to the border means that effectively you can't defeat this kind of a threat without a wall. In other words, you have to keep people from coming in, because once they get in, they get this panoply of rights, and then they disappear, and as a practical matter, we're never able to enforce the immigration laws and protect the border. So, yeah, I mean, this just makes it more of an imperative, and of course, and it's linked, because when people know you can't enforce the border security, then more of them will come, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Come in. I mean, they're encouraged. This was always the problem with an amnesty for people who were here unlawfully. It was that, okay, when you do an amnesty, the message you're sending out is that if you can figure out how to get into the United States, then eventually they're going to let you stay legally.
Right.
And so it creates what Romney used to call a magnet. I mean, I remember talking about this in the 2012 campaign.
Yeah.
So none of this is new. What's new is the political framework of it. And that's what's, I think, causing the problem. They don't want to give Trump the wall because Trump wants the wall. I mean, that's the reason. It's perfectly evident to everybody.
I would agree with you. You know, something I kind of overlooked in the final few minutes we have here, I want to get your thoughts on, because I know it's sort of your area of expertise. Secretary Pompeo's speech last week on foreign policy and Iran and all of these things, kind of rebuking the way the Obama administration approached this, it was a tremendous step forward, in my opinion, and a big announcement on the part of Pompeo. What are your thoughts on what? I mean, I'm glad that he came out and said it. It's true.
It was a great speech. I read it. I didn't watch it. I read it. It's so much quicker to read it, you know.
Sure.
And I love Mike Pompeo. You know, he's not Winston Churchill when he delivers a speech. So
no.
I read it for the substance, right? What basically happened is we're back in a sane world in terms of Middle Eastern policy, where the priority is constraining Iran. Check. Yes, that should be the priority. And the main operational means we use is constructing a network of partners. And who are they? Okay, it is Egypt, which, I mean, I love. I mean, Trump's, I don't like the military government in Egypt, but I like the fact that Trump's working with them. Egypt, Jordan, Israel, the Gulf states, and to include, yes, Saudi Arabia. And so, I mean, that strategy is informing our policy. That's why the president didn't completely alienate the Saudis after the Khashoggi affair, because there was a broader strategic interest of the United States at stake. And
yes,
I think Pompeo made all that reasonably clear. It's very reassuring to the people we want to reassure in the Middle East. And I think it's a shot across the bow to our adversaries, which is what we're supposed to be doing, right?
Maybe we can get the secretary to stick a cigar in his mouth the next time he gives a speech.
Yeah.
That might help.
Yeah, like I should have said that. It's not like I was Winston Churchill either when I gave speeches, but no, it was a great speech. I loved it.
I appreciate your time, Jim. Thank you.
Okay, man.
Talk to you soon. Jim Talent there, bipartisanpolicycenter.org, bipartisan.